recordings are started.
That we do not do a presentation of all the findings before we dive into a discussion, but we do have the visual summary in the Adobe room so that we can move to the respective parts. But what we suggest doing is we're asking the advisors whether they have questions for us, whether there are any concerns or questions or areas that are unclear for them, so that we get the clarifying questions out of the way in the first section of this call, and then we would go through the various chapters of our report and ask the advisors for their feedback on those. We do know that at least some of the advisors had a meeting with the board already during last week's board workshop, and certainly would very much like to hear what they shared with the board and how we can make best use of the advice that they shared with the board at the time. So according to my information, we now have Lee, Will, Nell, Valerie, and Jan-Art on the call.
Sorry. Hello?
Yes, who's that?
Did you just call me, Thomas?
No, I was just letting everyone know which advisors are on the call today.
I'm sorry, I just ran into my office.
Not to worry, but thanks. So obviously the phone bridge works for you to participate. That's good news. So I think we're then only missing Roberto and Ira. And so I think we have a very good turnout from the advisors as well. Now, as indicated earlier, we would like to give the advisors the opportunity to ask clarifying questions on our report before we then have a discussion with the advisors to seek their input on our findings. If there are no clarifying questions, there don't have to be any. That's all good.
I guess I've got one question, Thomas, and that relates to the email we received from Grace, certainly European time earlier today. This is the posting by the board of the assessment done by Jones Day, and I'm just wondering how that feedback from Jones Day feeds into the CCWG accountability process, because that seems to be something that the board has requested, or was it the case that the CCWG accountability requested the Jones Day feedback as well? And I'm just wondering what role does that feedback have then for the process within CCWG accountability onwards, as opposed to the board's decision making?
Thanks very much, Lee. The board has requested the analysis done by Jones Day, so that was not at the request of the CCWG. As you know, we have hired two law firms to assist us with this task, and we have representatives of those on this call today. The board has published the Jones Day legal assessment so that the whole community knows what information has been provided to the board, but it is my understanding that this is just to inform the board and that it does not represent the board's views, at least not at this stage. So I can't speak on behalf of the board, but we have Bruce Tonkin, who is our board liaison, on this call, and he's more than welcome to chime in as well. How this will impact the work of our group, we will certainly, or we've shared this feedback with the CCWG for everyone to look at. We've asked our outside counsel to also take a look at the analysis, and we will discuss it during the upcoming CCWG call or calls to see whether there are areas that require us to take action. Also, we will have several telephone conferences set up with the ICANN board, and we've also invited NTIA to the table as well as every party's legal advisor. The first call is a board briefing, which is going to take place at 22 o'clock p.m. today UTC for 90 minutes, and then there will be another three-hour call with the board on the 2nd of September, again at 10 p.m. UTC, and I'm sure that at least some of the feedback from Jones Day will be forming part of the deliberations. We are currently in the process of analyzing what they did, and you know, from what I saw personally, I can say that there's a lot to respond to this legal memo. Willie.
Hi, everyone. Thomas, I just have a number of concerns about this impact analysis. I don't know if it's worth for raising those now while we're dealing with it.
Well, you were very, very hard to hear. Can you please repeat? Or maybe somebody who did understand what Willie was saying can repeat it for me. Willie, why don't you give it another go? Moving a little bit closer to the microphone, please.
All right. Thomas, I was just saying that I looked at the first point on the impact analysis from Jones Day, and it raised a number of red flags for me. And I was wondering whether it would be worth inputting those right at the get-go, or whether you prefer to leave it for later.
So what I understood is that you have issues with the Jones Day paper, and that it raised some red flags. After that, you were breaking up on me. I do apologize. It must be the connectivity.
So no, I think Willie's question was whether those red flags should be raised now or later in the telephone conference.
Well, what I would suggest doing is, you know, we're not here to discuss the paper in depth, because I think what we want to avoid is that, you know, we continue a discussion between parties without these parties being at the table. So I would very much like to avoid any sort of criticism or other comment on the Jones Day analysis without them being present. But if you have concerns stemming from their analysis that would impact our work, that would certainly be helpful to know. So, Willie, maybe you want to speak to that.
Yeah, let me try and fix my connectivity and maybe come back to that.
Actually, the last bit you were saying was a little better, so I could understand the last sentence. Okay, so maybe Will has left the audio bridge and is trying to come back, so we'll get back to him later. Any further feedback or clarifying questions at this stage? Okay, so there don't seem to be any, which is why I'd like staff to help me scrolling through the slides, and I suggest we go to the first one more slide, please. And the next slide. And the next slide. So maybe this is the first or good idea to start the discussion and get your feedback. The intention of our work was to have an accountability system in place where certain community powers would only be invoked if and when needed. So ideally, if the interactions between the board and the community work fine, let's say on the budget, let's say on the strategic plan, on changes of bylaws, then no action would need to be taken, i.e., then likely the community powers would remain entirely unnoticed unless it comes to fundamental bylaws, which, as you know, would require the approval from the community. But our idea was that these community powers would constitute an escalation path only if needed, and that they should not interfere with the day-to-day operations in ICANN. Maybe we shouldn't dwell on this for too long, but still let me ask the advisors the question whether you think that we have accomplished this task, or whether you think that what we did actually does interfere with ICANN's day-to-day operations more than we anticipated. Jan?
Thomas. Jan, yeah. My question is a little bit about the overall presentation of the community mechanism, that I'm not clear whether it could interfere in everyday operations or not. I'm not clear. There's so many provisions and qualifications and details in those pages around that chapter of the community mechanism. I kind of lose my way a little bit, and I did wonder whether it was constructed in such a way that, against the intentions of those who are constructing it, it ends up being a mechanism that could be used by some elements to be disruptive. Also, there's some language in there which talks about the community mechanism being the ultimate authority, which sounds like you're getting, I didn't see clearly what the checks and balances on that account, that community mechanism itself, would be. And if there aren't those effective checks and balances on the community mechanism, does that mechanism have a chance of getting slightly out of hand? It may all be covered. It may be fine. But I suspect that those who would be looking for weaknesses in this proposal might go straight to that issue and start to exploit that as a reason why the overall proposal is not sufficiently tight.
Thanks very much, Jan. So just to paraphrase what you're saying, you're saying that the system might not be easy enough to explain. So I understand that you do not have an issue with the principles therein, but that it might be difficult to explain to the community, and therefore could potentially be in an abusive fashion. So I see you raised your hand again. So before we move to Will and Nell, can you just please briefly respond to that follow-up question?
I, having in detail your work, I'm fully confident and that the intentions are entirely right and clear, but I think there still are enough unclarities in the content as well as the presentation that those who will inherit these provisions, which will not be the members, today's members of the CCWG, but others, that they may inherit something, that they could do things with it that you had not intended. And there just, it seems to me there are some slippery areas, including the accountability of the community mechanism itself, which could, in the wrong hands, go the wrong way. I'm not sure, as I say, with a tighter and more clear presentation of some provisions, it might be covered. But at the moment, I see enough ambiguity in it that those who want to see ambiguities will highlight them.
Okay, so that, I take that as a strong signal to work on the messaging and facilitate the understanding in the way we present things. Willie?
My comment is that I think the right balance has been struck here, in the sense that if one looks at social contingency theories of accountability, they're very much concerned about how you balance sanctions-based accountability with trust-based accountability. And one of the things that, that social contingency deals with is that you can't entirely predict or control the future. So you have to structure your accountability systems in a way that the sanctions element of them is small and seldom to be used. But that is, it is nevertheless important that there is a sanction, what they call in the literature, sanctions, a small sanctions periphery. And I think if one looks at the community powers and the thresholds involved in activating them, to my mind, they constitute a small sanctions periphery to be used in the last resort. So in my sense, I think the community has struck the right balance.
Thanks very much, Willie. Mel? Now you might be on mute. Mel, maybe you can give us an indication in the chat whether you are, or if you're trying to speak, or whether there's a technical issue. I suggest that we move to Lee now, and we go back to Nell once her connection problem is solved. Lee?
Thanks, Thomas. Thanks, all. I'm basically happy with the community mechanism in its general elaboration. I agree with Jan that there are some details that could trip up the and some ambiguities that could trip up the reception of the proposal in the broader discussions. Nell, are you on again? No. Okay.
I think I'm on now.
Excellent. Okay, so, do you want to continue, Nell, or should I continue and then?
Lee, why don't you finish yours and we take Nell.
You continue.
Yeah. So as I was saying, I'm basically happy with the general framework of the community mechanism, and what I like about it is that the escalation in terms of sanctions is very, very graduated. So while, yes, one might end up with litigation in a Californian court, it's very unlikely to do so unless we have stakeholders involved that are really out to undermine the otherwise fairly delicate and harmonious balance that has existed up until now between stakeholders in the ICANN community. I think realistically we're looking maybe at a type of Fukushima moment where you would get the ultimate type of sanctions being applied, and Fukushima moments are very rare occasions indeed. But as I said, there are ambiguities and there are details that I think need to be explained better, particularly in the voting mechanism that is suggested and the balance of powers between the various SOs and ACs and then between those and broader community. So, but yeah, basic message, it's okay. That's enough for now.
Good to hear. Thank you so much, Lee. Now I'll move to Nell. Nell, I hope the audio is working now.
Yes, I think it is. Can you hear me?
Yes, we can hear you all right.
Oh, excellent. Okay. Well, I want to say a couple of things. I share this concern. I don't want to set up a sort of an infinite feedback loop of bureaucracy. I worry about setting up a mechanism that is going to so specific that it is constricting rather than enabling. I worry a little bit about, and I think this is raised in the Jones Day materials, the implementation and the ambitiousness of the hopes for getting it all done on time. And I also am concerned, and I've raised this before, and I'm going to continue to raise this, that there's not enough emphasis on transparency. And I don't just mean publishing it on our own site, but I mean genuine outreach so that the actions of ICANN and the roles of the various supporting entities are all made very, very clear to the community.
So, Ned, let me just ask you a follow-up question. So you're saying that we did not yet go far enough in being transparent with our suggestion?
Yeah, there's not enough emphasis on outreach. And it's not enough just to, as I said, to publish it on your own site. I think that the system really needs to be founded on continuous outreach through a variety of different avenues to make sure that users throughout the world are made aware of the decision-making process and the structure.
Okay, thank you very much for that. Will, is that an old hand or a new hand? So obviously that was an old hand. Can I ask staff to move to the next slide, please? So this is just to ask whether, and maybe, you know, you can just briefly confirm whether you're okay with this in principle, but this slide shows the notion of the four building blocks out of which we are building ICANN's accountability architecture. And I would suggest you only speak in case you disagree with these four building blocks being the right ones to have in place for increasing ICANN's accountability, because we're going to speak about the linkage between those in a moment, i.e. the community powers and the IRP and how we recommend to change the bylaws. So maybe Steph can just flip through the dynamic slide so that we see it in its final stage. Jan, please.
Yeah, Thomas, it's just a point I've raised with you before, but the empowered community is ambiguous, and rather ambiguous in much of the proposal. There's the empowered community on the one hand as the SOs and ACs doing their activities in ICANN's operations, and there's the empowered community as the mechanism, and they are not the same thing. So the ICANN board is clear, it's the board. The repeal of the mechanism is clear, it's the mechanism. The principles is clear, it's the bylaws. But the empowered community is not clear. Is it the empowered community mechanism as the legislature, as it were, of this structure? or is it the empowered community, all the activities that the SOs and ACs are doing within ICANN? I think you mean in this diagram the empowered community mechanism, the specific mechanism that has these powers in relation to the board. But I would then say so specifically so that it's clear.
Thanks very much for that. Your assumption is correct. We had lengthy discussions about the definition of the term community, and we came up with its definition as the current SOs and ACs, but users, companies, associations, and whoever is interested in this ecosystem can join their respective SOAC stakeholder group or constituency and thereby chime in and be part of the process. But I guess that's a good point that we need to be more clear in explaining the distinction between the community and what we mean by the term empowered community. Thank you for that. So this slide number 6 just shows the overview of what we're going to have. We have another slide which sets out the community powers in a little bit more detail, so I suggest we move to the next slide. And that is that we're suggesting to amend the bylaws, particularly the mission commitments and core values. So do you have any feedback on this area or on the way we are suggesting to incorporate part of the affirmations of commitment into the bylaws? As you will remember, the idea of this, or behind this exercise, was that we need to make sure that ICANN does not mission creep into areas that it should not work in. Also, missions, commitments, and core values would be the basic set of language that would be used by a panel when it comes to independent review processes, to check whether ICANN has acted within or without its bylaws, i.e. whether the bylaws are violated. Okay, I think, Janard, that is an old hand from your side, so you might wish to lower it. But the new hand, please do speak up. So there don't seem to be comments on this, so let's move to the next slide, please. And that is the notion of fundamental bylaws. You will remember that we have made a distinction between standard bylaws and fundamental bylaws. There's a specific process for changing each of those. So standard bylaws, once they are adopted by the board, the community can invoke a procedure to ask the board to review, or they can reject a standard bylaw change. While for fundamental bylaws, and this is a new concept, we introduced the idea of the need to have those approved, because the fundamental bylaws are those bylaws that are of such importance that they shouldn't be amended as easily as others. So we're trying to maintain flexibility for ICANN. You know, there might be the need to change ICANN's mission in future, but that should require a huge portion consent within the community. Any feedback on the idea or the principle of fundamental bylaws? So Lee is hitting his support check mark, and I thank you for that. Let me pause for another
second. Do I need to say to that? Yeah, I think this is a good approach. Makes sense to me.
Perfect. Thank you so much for that. And I think that's a relatively easy one, because I think at least in our group, the idea of fundamental bylaws got a lot of traction, because group members wanted to ensure that future boards can't easily turn back the clock and put aside or overturn accountability enhancements that are now in the process of being developed and hopefully be institutionalized. Let's move to the next slide, please. And that should be the update or the changes to the independent review process. And I'm now going to hand over to Leon, my fellow co-chair, to take care of that part of the session.
Thank you very much, Thomas. This is Leon. And well, as Thomas has just said, this slide takes us through the enhancements that we are planning to build into the independent review process. So we would very much like to hear your opinion and your comments with regards to this new IRP. So are there any comments or doubts regarding this new IRP? Let's remember that, of course, we would be speaking about a standing panel conformed by 7 members. And from those 7 members, we could then choose a panel made by 3 decision makers. And we have tried to address some issues like diversity, for example. And we listened to the community on avoiding to have single member panels. So I think those are 2 major changes that we introduced with our second proposal. So we would very much like to hear your opinion of this. Jan, please.
Yeah, hi, Leon. Just one unclarity or thought. It's always here determined whether ICANN has acted to act in violation of its bylaws. Just some ambiguity about what ICANN is here. Is it the board? Is it the staff? Is it the SAOs and ACs? Is it the community empowerment mechanism? In particular, for example, could the board use the IRP to challenge the community empowerment mechanism for overstepping its mandate or violating its rules and procedures? These are the kind of details that when I was saying earlier, I think need to be a little bit more explicit and clear for us to know exactly what we're talking about. Thanks.
Thank you very much, John. I think that so far the IRP has been focused mostly on actions by or inactions by the board. So I think it's a good comment, and thank you for bringing this to the table. We should be a little bit more specific on what we mean by ICANN. Are there any other comments or questions on this enhanced IRP model? Okay, so having no other comments, can we, I see Lee, could you please?
Yeah, a question around standing. I must admit, it's been a little bit. It's been a while since I've looked at the IRP proposal, but I when I looked at last, there wasn't a great deal on the standing issue exactly. Who is able to bring an IRP, and that I guess leverages off Jan's question too, as to whether the board could possibly use an IRP to. To hit back at the community mechanism.
I'm sorry, Lee, I wasn't able to hear that.
Okay, my question had to do with the rules on standing, that is, who is able to bring and initiate an IRP. And I'm just wondering whether more detail needs to be put into the explanation as to the as that particular issue, for example, and that then leverages off Jan's question as to whether the board could possibly use an IRP to hit back at a community mechanism.
Secondly, so the IRP would apply for anyone that is materially harmed. I think Becky has answered to these on the chat box. And, well, she's telling us that except for a community IRP that is threshold-based, we would establish a threshold for these IRP too. So next to the queue, I have Neil. Neil, are you being mute?
Oh, yes. I'm not sure that I agree with the idea that the board would confirm the membership. I think that the IRP should have the final decision on who its members are.
Okay. So we have on the call. Becky, would you like to clarify?
I think you understand why I raised this concern.
Leon, were you calling on me?
Yes, Becky, could you?
Yeah, I'm not sure I understand the concern. It's in terms of there may be two distinctions, but the panel itself would be nominated by the community and then confirmed by the board and under the current proposal. But the individual decisional panels, assuming it was ICANN and a claimant, the claimant would choose one, the ICANN would choose one, and collectively they would choose the third member of the decisional panel. So I'm not quite sure whether you're talking about the decisional panel or the panel itself.
Now, could you please clarify so Becky can address that?
Yeah, I take your point on the decisional panel, but what does it matter if all of the options are approved by the board? It seems to me that there's a clear conflict of interest there, and I would rather have I think you have a better shot at genuine independence if the standing panel itself has the final say on who its members are.
Okay, that's an interesting suggestion. I think that we were proceeding on more on a kind of advice and consent process where the members, in addition to the strict neutrality or the strict conflicts of interest policy, that what you would end up with was panelists who were accepted by the community and by the board.
The role of resolving disputes between the community and the board, and therefore if the board itself is ultimately signing off on who serves on it, it seems to me that tilts the playing field quite a bit.
Obviously that's a valid perspective. Of course, they are only confirming the panel proposed by the community.
Well, that's still either not confirming people that they feel are going to challenge them, possibly.
I presumably that could happen.
Yeah, okay, so it seems that you minimize that risk. I don't see any particular benefit in letting them choose who's going to be reviewing their decisions, and I do see a benefit in having that conducted in a more independent way.
Okay, so let's continue with this. I see the Jenny's hand is up. Jenny, if you have something really short, remember that this call is mainly for our advisors, and we still need to move on, and we have only 10 minutes to go. So if you have something really short to say, welcome.
Yes, thank you, Leon. Very short.
Oh, no.
What I wanted to say is that the standing panel is selected by the community and the board at the end. If it is not selected by those, by whom do you propose they will be selected? So standing panel is selected by the community and the board. And then each decision panel is chosen by the two parties. That's all. So there is no, I don't see the conflict of interest. If you want the community to be the sole one who will select the panel, it will be also a problem because the panel should be also be independent from the community and from the board. Thank you.
Thank you very much, Diane. So can we please move to the next slide? Okay, so here we have the request for reconsideration. And let's remember the key reforms that we propose is expanding the scope of permissible requests, extending the time for filing from 15 to 30 days. Of course, the grounds for summary dismissal have been narrowed, and we require the ICANN Board of Directors to make determinations on all requests after receiving recommendations, and not only the Board Governance Committee. We are also adding tasking ICANN Summitsman with initial substantive evaluation and providing requesters an opportunity to rebut the Board's Governance Committee recommendation and providing enhanced transparency requirements. Are there any comments that our advisors could give us with regards to these enhancements that we have designed for the request for reconsideration process? Okay, no one?
Lee? Yeah, just to say, I think this all, again, all makes good sense. So, yep, I support these reforms.
Thank you very much, Lee. Okay, so can we go to the next slide? So with regards to the community mechanism and sole member model, are there any comments that we could get from you? Or are there any doubts or questions? No one? Okay, Lee?
Yeah, I have some problems with the way in which the community mechanism is going to be constituted from the AECs and SOs, particularly as we don't have all AECs and SOs on board, it would seem. And how to get a widespread and diverse representation of the community into this community mechanism, I think, remains a challenge.
Thank you, Lee. I think that this will be, of course, part of implementation, but let's remember that the whole community will be part of the mechanism. It's just that those that choose to actually part of the member structure will be the ones that will be casting the vote. So I think that representation will be there. It's just that the community mechanism as a sole member will be the one that would be actually exercising the powers. Next, I have John.
Yeah, Leon. There's a lot of good stuff here, but again, I think there's some detailed aspects. I know that for the moment the process of voting in the community mechanism is being deferred, but I just wonder whether it's safe to send this proposal forward to NTIA without specifying what that process of voting is going to be, because I would have thought that people could jump on that to say, we want to make sure that the voting procedure is of such a kind that can avoid the sort of capture that that NTIA is concerned about. So if you haven't detailed the process of voting at this stage to give reassurances to those who would criticize this proposal, that you might be opening yourself to weak points in that way. I mean, there are other little details, like let's say that a new SO or AC was refused participation in the community empowerment mechanism. Could that new SO or AC go to the independent review panel? Is it one of those occasions when the community mechanism could be subject to the IRP? Anyway, there's a number of those kinds of little details. I just give those as examples, but there's some gaps. A lot is covered. It's very, very good. It's incredibly detailed, but there's some gaps where I think where the proposal can be a little bit vulnerable to those who want to critique it.
Thank you very much, Jan. Let's remember that the proposal has some exercises that the group has overtaken with regards to voting thresholds and how the voting could actually happen. So I'm not sure if that's what you're referring to, but I would think that we have tried to at least address that concern through the different charts that we have built into our document, which show how any given vote would be actually happening and with the different voting thresholds. And we have been very careful actually how to avoid capture from any certain group.
No, I think, Leon, what I mean is, not, I know you have the various norms about percentages and so on and so forth. I mean the actual process of voting. How would a vote take place? How would one actually get the vote that you would then measure against those kind of thresholds? Paragraph 310 seems to imply that that's not yet worked out and is going to be worked out later, and I'm not sure that that's going to be a safe thing to say.
Okay, thank you, John. We have very little time, and I would definitely like to extend on this, but I'd like to hear from Willie as well. So, Willie?
Yeah, hi, Leon. I fully support this sole member model, especially after having watched the process that is being put together at the Paris meeting. I think it does resolve a lot of the concerns that have been raised in the prior public comment period. It's in this context where the concern that I was raising earlier about the Jones and Day impact analysis, in which they suggest that the model should be tested, that I think is a red flag for me, because I don't think one can test these kinds of governance structures in a sense, because that sets up a kind of false situation. And I would hope that the community could feel adequately strengthened to do any kind of implementation in a real situation. And I say that largely because when you talk about testing or experiments, the risk is that you commit a kind of scientific fallacy in which you assume that models from natural science can be applied successfully to complex adaptive systems where there are random variables at play and multiple translations. And I think especially when one moves into social and political and economic spaces, it's risky to try and posit a kind of test process. I would far rather see that this community mechanism is seen as a constitutional moment, and that once it is implemented, obviously its success or failure should be subject to review and potentially changed in the future. And I think the other problem I have with the notion of an impact assessment is it's generally, you know, I come partly from a telecommunications regulatory space. When you're sitting in the regulator and an incumbent telecoms operator, your AT&T, for example, comes along and says you must do a regulatory impact assessment, that is usually a sign that the incumbent wants to prevent what you're doing from taking place, to set up blocks and barriers towards a regulator operating effectively. And so monopoly power is something that is hard to give up. I'm not really surprised to see this in the Jones and Day impact assessment. but I think the community needs to be very wary of any incumbency arguments which say you can't do this until you've done an impact analysis, because essentially my sense is that impact analyses, where they don't apply to things like the environment or natural sciences, are epistemologically thick and dubious, and that one rather needs to read them as part of a power play to have something done or not done. Thank you.
Thank you very much, Willie. I think many of us had a little bit trouble listening to you, but let's continue this on the list. And now I would like to go to our next slide. Are there any comments with regards to the powers we have tried to provide the community with by these enhancements? I see Willie's hand is still up. I don't know if that's an old hand, Willie, or would you like to comment on the powers? Or do we have any other comments from advisors on the powers for the community? I'm mindful that we are reaching top of the hour. So if there are no other comments, let's go to the next slide, please. Okay, so these are examples of how we would actually be exercising the powers. And I don't know if are there any comments from our advisors on how we have tried to depict the whole picture of how we would actually be exercising the powers. And the next slides are, of course, specific examples on the different powers. And the first one was an overall view of how this process would work. So do you have any feedback for us on these different examples and the way we have tried to depict the overall process? Can we go back to slide 13, which I think is the overall process? So there would, of course, be a cause. Then it would raise a petition. If that petition has some support, it would start a discussion by the whole community, and then we would come to a decision, which would then be taken into or forwarded to the ICANN board to take action. I see Jen, could you please?
Yeah, no, Leon, I think, again, the general outline of the process makes perfect sense and is coherent and convincing. It's the various details, exactly how decision would be taken, concretely, specifically, how would the decision be taken. And somewhere else, there's a reference to that the discussion would or could include the new community forum. Well, again, how? So what would be the relationship between the community forum and the empowerment mechanism? Exactly how would that work? I'm trying to envision how in practice, in concrete practice, these things would unfold. And there I'm not always clear exactly what would be happening.
Thank you very much, John. I see Thomas. Thomas, could you please?
Yes, thank you, Leon. And just as a follow-up question to Jan, Jan, I think it will be unrealistic for this group to come up with a full manual of procedures and all the nitty-gritty of the various processes before we submit our report to the chartering organizations for approval. Are you thinking more of maybe some graphics, as we have here, describing the various processes and making it easier to understand, and maybe describing some case studies that can happen and how we deal with that, or would you actually see the need for us to spell out all the niceties?
Thomas, I'm not really speaking for myself. I'm trying to think politically what is going to happen as this proposal goes to the board and as the board transmits it to NTIA. Where could any of these ambiguities, unclarities, raise doubts on the part of either the board or NTIA, which would then cause you problems as it went to Congress and was being viewed there. If you, as long as you feel confident that there's enough covered, that you're not exposed to certain senators wanting to take this in mischievous directions, then I think, you know, you're fine. But that's a political judgment that I'm not really qualified to make.
Okay, thank you very much, John. Are there any other comments with regards to this general approach and this general scheme of how the actual powers would be exercised? Okay, so we can skip to the final slides. So this is how the influence of the community mechanism would be fitting into our proposal. Are there any comments on this? This is the chart that I was referring to when I said how the different voting thresholds would be expected to happen. Willie? Willie, might you be on mute? Willie, we are not able to listen to you. Okay, we'll go with Jam while Willie tries to solve the audio issues. Jam?
Yeah, no, Leon, it's again just a question of what the actual voting procedure would look like. You know, if a parliament or a national assembly, or this is community mechanism is kind of a legislative branch, if you like, of the ICANN structure as it's being proposed here. I mean, if I think about a legislature in a government, then I know how they vote. They sit in a room and they've got little buttons in front of them, and they register their votes. I'm still wondering how the voting in a community mechanism, what is actually going to look like. Again, it may be one of those details that can be deferred till later, but it's still a question mark. At the moment, I see this diagram, but I'm wondering how this diagram will translate into actual bodies making actual actions.
Thanks, Jan. Well, the principle that we have been discussing is, of course, to have the different SONICs define the voting by their representatives in their own procedural manners, and then having those representatives cast the vote within the community mechanism. So this is how we would be thinking of actually casting the different votes by the different SOAs and NACs. We would be leaving to the SOs and ACs the decision on how to actually direct the votes for the community mechanism by their different representatives. Willie, have you been able to solve the issue on the audio?
Perhaps, Leon, can you hear me?
Yes, we can't hear you now.
Hello? Okay. I think it was right to stick with the 29 votes maximum. My only wondering is whether there should be some kind of threshold the entire mechanism can be activated. Something like the mechanism continuing to play if the three SOs agree to join as voting members. Something like that. So that it obviates concerns that if only one or two SOs or ACs join as voting members, then there's a capture risk. So my minimum would be to say that if the three SOs join as voting members, then the community mechanism can be activated.
Thank you very much, Willie. I think at least on my side, I wasn't really able to get the idea on what you said based on the very fussy audit that we have here. But mainly, you agreed with the turnaround structure, but you were also concerned with having some kind of capture at some point, if I got it well. Next in the queue, I have Alan Greenberg.
Thank you very much. What Willie said was he's concerned that you could end up with very few ACs and SOs participating. Although we're starting with four, you could end up with two dropping out and then have all the decisions made by only two SOs or even one SO, and that would be that would be capture. I believe that's what he said. The question I wanted to raise, and now I've forgotten what it is. So I hope I may put my hand up again if we have time. Sorry, in explaining what Willie was saying, I think I lost what I was going to say.
Thank you very much. We have passed 10 minutes from the top of the hour. John, would you like to make a last comment on this, so we can then continue with the next slide?
Just to observe that the GAC is listed here as a potential voting constituency, and wondering whether that's going to open up some objections to those who would want to see that as an avenue of government capture, which is one of the things that NTIA say they definitely don't want.
Thanks, Sean. Well, that is not for us to decide.
Is NTIA going to be happy with? I'm not saying NTIA should have a veto of everything, but they are an influence. Are they going to be happy with a proposal that has GAC being an advisory sort of role to the board, and at the same time also be in a position where they can be part of the overthrow of a board, for example?
Well, that's a real concern, and we'll find out soon enough, John. We'll find it soon enough. So can we please go to the slide on stress tests? And Alan, I see your hand up, but since we've passed 10 minutes from top of the hour, I would like to go to the stress test slide, then call for some comments from our advisors. And if we don't have any, then we will just finish the call. Do we have any comments on the stress tests that have been performed? Let's remember that we have divided stress testing into five different areas. There have been more than 25 stress tests performed, and we do think that all the stress tests that have been carried out actually address the different concerns that might be raised by the community, but of course we like to listen from you. And I have Willie. Willie, could you please?
Yes, Leon, I think the stress tests are great. They are what we really need to have here as opposed to impact analysis. The stress tests, I think, do the work that they are meant to do, which is to indicate any of the risks that might occur and what how such risk could be addressed. So I think for me the stress tests are a way of looking ahead in a constructive way and not in a way like an impact analysis where the whole thing is epistemologically dubious.
Thank you very much, Willie. Do we have any other comments from our advisors? Okay, so no more comments from our advisors. And I would now like to turn back to my co-chair, Thomas, for our closing remarks and to end this call. Thomas?
Thanks so much, Leon. And let me
first of all, thank all of you for a very interesting discussion. That's not only for the advisors, but also for the working group and community members that have joined. I guess our main takeaway is that we got a lot of support for what we did so far. There have been a few areas where we are asked to take another look at our recommendations. I'm specifically thinking of the comments made by Nels, and we will analyze that in more detail. I also take away Jan's point that we should not lose out of sight the political dimension of things, and that we need to have our story told in a fashion that it is understood and not ambiguous. So we'll surely work on that. We would very much like to encourage you to also submit your written feedback to the public comment forum for everyone to review. We will, however, also analyze the feedback that we got today and discuss with the working group. And, Will, I'm, again, sorry that we had some audio issues, so we will go back to the transcript and double-check that what you said was correctly understood. Let me also refresh everyone's memory on the close of the public comment period, which is going to be on the 12th of September. So please do make sure that you submit your comments. And again, thanks so much for all your time and for the dedication to this project. And let me also say that if you have more comments that you would like to share with us, or that where you have clarifying questions, by all means do approach the CCWG or the co-chairs, and we will try our best to ensure that your questions are answered. So with that, I would like to end this call. Thanks to staff, to everyone who's been on the call, and let's continue the good discussion. Thank you. Bye-bye.
Thanks, everyone. Bye-bye.